So, among the grounds of modern cosmology, okay, one may think of plasma acceleration as a cosmological concept. One may also wonder about the nature of dark matter. And speaking about plasma acceleration, one may think, or one may suppose, that it's a dynamical component, or maybe it's not. All right, let's see. Okay, among the possibilities of having a dynamical component, one may think of string models, and this is Uplift, Brunstickky Light, and Graviton. I think that's been interesting in Ciano. Among phenomenon, and then there are more, I would say, a phenomenological approach. And when you want to just to explain the exact, and you want to just give a low energy description. Okay. Among this, among the phenomenological model, one may think of quintessence, an example, and also scalar tensor theories, essentially scalar field coupled with R, and a chameleon field. Phantom and ghost coming. Well, we talk about later on about ghosts, but okay, let me give a first. Okay, so the talk is going to be divided into three parts. First one, I'm going to describe a model that I studied when I was very serious. In the second one, I began to destroy that model because I was not investing anymore. And the third part, I think I completely destroyed it. But okay, maybe this.
So you're an assassin.
Yes, exactly. That's good, no? I mean, to kill models. Better than to kill people, I would say. Well, let's see. Okay, first of all, I mean, if you want to think about correction at large scales to GR, one has to be, one has, at least one should try to make a consistent model. Should also check if the solution itself is stable. And of course, there are some possibility of having solar system constraints. For example, the GB model is an attempt to modify gravity, but at least the self-accelerating brain has a position. Okay. Let me begin with a very short introduction of something that it's not a model I want to talk about, but it's simpler enough that I think it's a good introduction to that. Okay, so that's the so-called F of R theory. Okay, so one first thing of consistency one should check is the first derivative with respect to R should be positive. We'll see in the next slide why that should be the case. Now, okay, so for example, just considering this example over here, I mean, cos here is not the solution for this action here. And as you can see, this condition is satisfied. All right. So now, that action that we just saw, F of R theory, is completely equivalent to this action over here, where, as you can see, now you have a function of a scalar field, and here you have the prime derivative with respect to phi. It's clear that you can make a theory definition to call F prime to be chi, say. So then you have chi times R minus a potential for chi. So that is a scalar tensor theory.
Yeah. This phi is auxiliary field?
Okay, but auxiliary field, I would say it's a field that is does not have dynamics, essentially. That's not, yeah. But in this case, as you can see, there is this nominal cutting, and the nominal cutting actually plays a role as an effective kinetic term for the field phi. So if you want, you can say that in equations of motion, you will have like a box of F prime of phi, you say, just because you have the nominal. Part of the equation of some motion. Okay, so, and at a scalar tensor theory, F prime plays the role of an effective Newton constant. There, so F prime here, or if you want to, you can expand this about the tensor modes, you get this term over here. So F prime needs to be positive, otherwise the graviton becomes a ghost. And by ghost I mean a particle who has an opposite sign for the kinetic term. Right? Alright, so that's and this F prime becomes the df over the other sort of form. So that's why the condition has to be satisfied.
Excuse me, so in general for a left of phi theory there is a one more degree of freedom, no?
That's true. And that's the scalar field here.
Yeah. So only in the case where f of phi is equal to phi. I expect that in the normal case of general relativity, I'm left with just one degree of
that's
freedom.
Right.
So, what's the condition to have just one degree of freedom?
Well, okay, so if you put f of phi to be phi, f prime becomes just one, so then you have a scalar field that does not have a connected term, essentially. So that, if you find the equation of motion, that you find phi is equal to constant, phi is equal to zero, whatever.
Okay. So in the field it's free.
So in that case, it does not propagate, then you go through to the thing. But if you have the f prime there, then it propagates.
So what if f of phi is log phi? If it's log phi, d phi is 1 over phi. That's Brent's leaky, right?
Exactly. It's Brent's leaky, exactly. That's totally true. It's a Brent's leaky with a Brent's leaky parameter equal to 0. Essentially, it's a Brent's leaky field with no kinetic term. So if you call phi to be f prime of phi, then you have phi r minus the potential for phi. Yes, it's a Brent's leaky parameter. Sorry, maybe I didn't understand the question.
So generically, if you have f of r,
theory,
it's the role of gravity scalar with kinetic term. So it's just that in this particular case of f of r, then the kinetic term vanishes.
No. In any f of r, the kinetic term vanishes. If you want, f of r is a subset of Brent's leaky theories. So let me write it another way. So Brent's leaky is... the action there, that's true for any f of r. So the difference is here. I mean, so if you put omega is a dimensionless parameter. So if you put omega is equal to 0, it's actually like that.
But that means it's infinitely strongly interacting. If I go to the limit of a small linear, I can do the proper limit
The statement that delta phi is a subset of Brent's leaky is
strictly speaking, a purely
spherical theory does not have a potential thing. That's true. Yeah, you're right.
But it should be there.
Yes, you're right. Brent's leaky proposes theory without potential.
So I was asking if you can perform a transformation, and then you get a kinetic term.
That's true. But that's just because that's a scalar tensor theory. Any scalar tensor theory can make a conform transformation. You can go to R plus kinetic term. Sorry about that. Yes. Yeah, and you go to the Einstein. In this case, they are completely equivalent. If you put matter, then the matter gets the cut. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. It's over.
Battery
is okay.
That's very helpful.
You don't see anything there, right? Okay, I see things here, I don't see things there. Maybe I should wait.
What is it?
So there's no signal there.
Could you go to system preference and display?
Yeah, I did. Okay. You mean this? And then, like, I did.
Switch to the other input map.
You mean on the projector?
On the projector, yeah.
Is it goes over here?
No, is it this controller? You're on input 2.
While it's being fixed, can I ask another question?
Yeah.
Your original graduate kind of OE1 parameter, R, how do you manage to get 2 out? That extra 5, I don't understand. You have R, at the beginning you have only R, right? I'm assuming mu was a constant. You had R minus mu squared over R. Or
yeah.
Over R squared or something.
Yeah.
So there's only one
mu.
Field. Was mu a field or was it constant?
No, constant.
So then we have only one field, R. How do you manage to get 2 fields out of that?
Well, the thing is that now you have a function of the field. So essentially, what happens
but
is...
But then you have an R and you have a 5, so that's 2 fields.
Yeah, the thing is that 1 divided by R, actually, it's not R. So essentially, the thing that...
No, but it's related to R, whereas that 5 is not related.
No, okay, but... So in other words, this 1 divided by R introduces a log, if you want, R, does not introduce an extra scale that is a field. If you want, it's closed.
The point is that f of R is the rich scale, you can always turn it into a fresh field.
Is it again?
Zabu's question is why when I add higher powers of R do I have extra degrees of freedom?
Yeah.
And the answer is when you add higher powers of R, you have extra derivatives, so you have extra degrees of freedom.
Yeah.
Really what you're doing is you're making the trace isometric. It currently is not dynamical. Here it becomes dynamical.
So if you want, I mean, just because I introduce this, another way to say what Justin says is that the equations are become, if you're looking at them, they get extra terms because this is only divided by R. Okay, that's it.
R is a scalar.
Yeah,
Einstein
and
Frank
have the
It's just,
yeah.
He's going to come
back. Oh, okay, no, you're being, I can continue by writing, but.
No, it's nice. So, can I ask, I'm a little surprised by your statement that dfdr has to be positive. I guess somehow I didn't know this. So you say, can you write on your on the board? You had some just Lagrange multiplier type way to implement this, right?
Yeah, so what happens is...
I'm just a bit surprised, actually, you can't have it.
Yeah, okay, so, essentially, okay, here, in Brandstick, you have to put that chi is positive. Otherwise, you get a ghost.
Sure.
All right. So here, you get that this becomes df over d phi. All right?
Yes.
So df over d phi has to be positive. Otherwise.
You say I couldn't from the start have called chi to be minus df dr or something like that? Can't I go to another branch where things are well defined?
If you want the algorithm to behave well, you need to enforce that branch.
Why can't chi is 1 over chi? It's So you're saying the kind cannot kill
latency. Yeah.
But I don't see why that reduces the latency.
Because okay, so if you take Minkowski, okay, take Minkowski, if you understand this and choose, for example, just the tensor, R becomes HIJ box HJI. This is R, expanded H. You put chi in front, because chi, you know, this is just tensor mode, it doesn't come with that. So this gives you the sign of the candy term. So chi, or if you want, the Newton constant must be positive at any time. If you put chi negative, then the kinetic term for the tensor modes becomes negative. So what happens in Brass theory, it is this term over here, one divided by chi, if you want, protects the theory to go to chi negatives. So that's something that I really like a lot in this kind of, so there is a self-preventing term that says that. Because, okay, in this case you may argue omega is equal to zero. In fact, that's the problem, right? So, but if omega, say, is different from zero, unless you have particular things, if you go to chi that goes to zero, essentially this behaves as a separatrix. Essentially, chi is equal to zero, your solution is going to look either like this or goes away from that, but it doesn't cross. So in Brass theory, you have a self-protecting method there. Get a little bit nervous, but all right. Okay, let me move on. Okay, so then. Okay, now the point was okay. So the idea was okay, so what happens now if instead of f of r, we say something like this? Let's take f of r and other curvature invariants. Okay? That seems to be very happy. It is very happy. I'm not saying it's a nice Grandjean idea. And so that was the first question. So what happens there? Okay, so, okay, just to be clear, I'm going to call this one little p. So p is Ricci square. And then also Riemann square, I'm going to call it q. Okay? Just names. All right. So one can think of something like this, but of course one can do even different things. Okay, so one can do even higher order, I mean cubic terms and so on. Okay. So is there something that we should say? No, we don't like these terms. Why? Some theoretical bounds. Okay. Now before doing that though. Before doing that, so like in f of r, there was some excitement about writing something like this. And if mu was essentially of order Hubble parameter today, then you had a theory that could in principle accelerate. So then the first thing that we started was something like, say, we put something like this, or maybe a linear combination of. Say a1 squared plus a2 b plus a3. Right?
So, what kind of correction do you get to the Einstein's equation from that if you have that term in the Lorentz?
Just more. Okay, exactly. Okay, so the correction you get, it's a wild correction, the same. There we go. Okay, so the correction you get. Is that equations are fourth order differential equations in the metric. So Einstein equations, g mu nu is equal to, anyway, so g mu nu is a tensor made of g mu nu, first derivatives and second order derivatives. And it's linear in the second derivatives of g mu nu. Okay, if you introduce this kind of thing, then you get like this kind of terms. Box G mu, all right.
Wait, so if you introduce the P's or the just because you wrote to correct the most general one. That
let me say any general, and then we'll see how I can Okay, let's say in general, yes, for any combination, linear combination. Or if you want, for any general function, like this. Or for any possible function of a higher order curvature invariance. Though there is a particular combination, it is called Gauss-Bonnet. It's r squared minus 4p plus q. And that actually, okay, we'll talk about that later. All right, so we have fourth order differential equations. So first of all, we need to understand how to say make cosmology out of those.
This Heisenberg's theory, Ostrogresky's theory, says this is full of ghosts.
Yeah, exactly.
It's diseased. It's dead.
That's true. It's
terrible viruses.
That's true. Let me actually anticipate a little bit because you said that. Okay, people said, if I get this nice combination over here, equations of motion become second order. And it is true. So what people, just a moment, I said that when I began post, I wanted to destroy these models. And so people got excited because they were second order differential equations. And people said, okay, so I got rid of all the ghosts. Now, but the ghosts now, we should be clear what kind of degrees of freedom we're talking about. So when you have this box of G mu, you have essentially four derivatives there. And what happens is that going back to your question, when you put something like this, you excite a scalar degrees of freedom. When you put something like this, you excite some spurious extra to spin to degree of freedom. So you have a graviton plus another spin to particle. That spin to particle actually has already Minkowski has the opposite sign kinetic term. So that's a ghost. So it's a spin to ghost. But okay, before going there, that's the second part of the talk. Let me talk a little bit about the cosmology, all right? Okay, so on computer numbers to work, one has just one dynamical variable, A, and that's true here as well, in this F of X. But what happens is that the Friedmann equation now becomes a third-order differential equation in A. So you can write in that way. What happens is that in vacuum, you can reduce the order of the differential equation by using the Hubble parameter, and you get the second order differential equation. At that point, you can make a fist-based analysis by defining H to be minus the Hubble parameter, and then you get this equation here, where prime now denotes derivative with respect to x. So it's clear now what we should do. We can plot y prime as a function of y and x in the y x plane, and then we can see the flow of the solution. Okay. Before doing that, let me just say another thing. That for a power law behavior, the relationship between y and x is a parabola, where p is constant. Therefore, it becomes useful to introduce this b in this way. And when b goes to the constant, essentially you have a power law solution. All right, so then instead of y, one introduces b, and then you can write down your first order differential equation. Okay, example. If I consider this 1 by the r theory, then you get this kind of thing. Okay, so these answers here are b prime, essentially that tells you the flow. As you can see, for at least a large parameter space on initial conditions, then you end up, when x is small, x was the Hubble parameter, when Hubble parameter is small, you get eight times. So you get that b goes to constant, meaning that at eight time you will have a power law solution. And it's an attractor. So power law bigger than one, accelerating, so then you get an accelerating power law attractor. Okay, that was an ice cream, probably the only one. But anyway, so, and for example, this one, okay, if you take the Gauss-Bonnet combination there, 1 divided by Gauss-Bonnet, and then you get this, now the accelerating power attract is 5. Alright, so this was just how to deal with these equations. Now, okay, in order to be a little bit more specific, so the B prime equation, basically you can think of even raising this to the power n, thinking of Laurent series, that's the largest term there that drives acceleration today. Anyway, so if you put just n for simplicity, n is equal to 1, then you can write the equation B prime in this way. Now, at late time, x goes to 0, or if you want, x is much less than parameter mu, so this term can be neglected. If B goes to a constant, this term vanishes here, and the solution of this equation becomes then g of B is equal to this constant. Okay, well, I didn't say, but dg and h are polynomials in B. Okay, so, and this, okay, so this polynomial.
Sorry, what's x and
b? I forgot
what x and b is. Is it again?
What's x and b? X is minus h, and y is equal to h dot.
And
V, let me see, V is equal to this. So essentially, when V goes to constant, you get the power law solution. So instead of Y, you take V.
So V is related to P at the end of the day, right?
Yes. So when V, if you get V is equal to P.
V is equal to P.
So essentially, for a power law attractive solution, B is equal to B, and B is the exponent of the power law. Okay, so.
So just to make sure I understand, when you got k equals 2 as your attractor, that just says a double dot is a constant. It's like saying if I have a third derivative equation, constant acceleration is a solution.
A double dot to constant.
A goes
to
the square.
Oh, yeah.
And you said t to the fifth is an attractor, and that's because you must have sixth order equations.
And
if you have higher order equations, then you can accelerate particles. You don't have step.
On
their own.
What changes from 1 n by r and say, that's one, but I'm not sure if I have to answer your question, is that you change essentially these polynomials. So when you change, so then you look for the zeros of the polynomials. The phase space plot before was exact, just plotting. But in order to get to understand better what's going on, then essentially you study zeros.
You have to get a double dot to be positive.
Exactly. So V.
But do you do that?
Yeah, V has to be bigger than 1. Any late time attractor that is bigger than 1 are separately existent. All right. So then, the zero g and the power of time. I'm going to skip these two things that I like. Okay, so first part. Right. So the model presented the power law attractor. There was like parameter space for which those attractors were accelerating. And that's an important stuff. So the De Sitter solution is unstable in general for this kind. Meaning that if you put there the r is equal to constant and so on, if you perturb a little bit only on the background, then you go to the power of attractor solution.
But that's unstable when you've got matter anyway, right? Even without perturbations.
But remember that I was studying this one in vacuum so far.
Right.
So that was just a late time, very late time study. So even in vacuum, the Sitter was not an attractive solution. Okay, that was important. Why? Because people began to study the Stravinsky theorem about the Sitter. And my point was, why do people study the Sitter if the Sitter is unstable already on the background? Not even by studying perturbations. So I said, maybe it makes more sense. Since we don't know what's the ground state of the theory, Okay, I'm going to call the ground scalability theory the power law attractor solution, because it's the point where the universe goes to. So then I said, so maybe people should study the presence of hosts or perturbation on those solutions. That was my point. So in order to do that, I had to study the freedom of so perturbation about freedom of Lorentz of Wolf in general. Okay, so that was important stuff. Okay, so if here you put this minus 4 and you put here 1, this A1R squared behaves just an extra scalar degree of freedom. But the tensorial part, the extra spurious spin 2 particle, disappears if one chooses this particular combination. Yeah?
This is only done in, this is not done in an open temperature case. How do you know you don't get close to open temperature?
Because you're
still basing it on biology pressure function. So the fact that you think you get rid of ghosts,
That's true. However, so suppose I have the function of this. Okay, any function. All right. So you can do a kind of little trick as before. Of course, this one, let me put the actually R squared. Plus. So let me put actually any general function of R and Gauss-Bonnet. It's clear that the one I wrote before was equal to this, okay? Okay, so then I do this little trick. So like that, I write S and then F lambda phi plus R minus lambda F over D lambda plus RGB squared minus pi df over d pi. Alright? Now, if you find the equation most of pi and lambda, then you get exactly this thing. Alright, now, what happened here? Okay, actually, that's the whole point of the second part. Now you get two scalar fields. You can call this the first scalar field, and here the second. It are coupled, one with R, scalar density theory, plus another scalar field that is coupled with this one. Oops. So you have a theory that looks almost very nice. I mean, you have Gauss-Bonnet there. It doesn't decouple completely because this means it's not just a constant. All right? However, as I said before, like in the F of R, one has to impose this kind of thing. So one may suspect that something like similar to this should hold also in this case. And now we're gonna see what that is. Okay, so in principle that means, and this is true for any background, by the way. So essentially that theory there is equivalent to two scalar fields. And what are those scalar fields? Is one and two. Okay, let me make a more general thing. Let me put here any log-log scalar. Okay, I put the infinite tower series of log-log terms. Then I have an infinite scalar field coupled with each log-log part. Right? So anytime you introduce a function of one of the scalar, you essentially introduce a scalar field times the scalar itself. Alright, so. Okay, so that was a thing. So again, for example, in Minkowski, that's clearly well behaved because this becomes a constant and this decouples completely. Yeah.
There's a way about the combination Gauss-Bonnet is because it's global and it does not contribute to local equations of motions, or because if you say Gauss-Bonnet, that's what comes into our mind, right? That is something just.
It's topological if it's not coupled with anything. If you just put the V4S.
No,
I don't
think it would not contribute to the relations of motion.
It's a total derivative.
Yes, exactly.
But he's coupling it to
if you want, let me put a little bit more general statement. Any maximally symmetric space, this thing will be constant. Because phi is equal, the equation of motion phi is equal to Gauss-Bonnet. And lambda is equal to 1. And by the way, this is not just, this is a differential equation in the Jing Yu.
Yes, okay, so if I say this is a gravity theory,
yeah,
then I have to do a Cauchy issue higher solution, including spatial derivatives, as well as time derivatives. And when you do that, you get back your ghosts. You have to. You're only dealing with time here. Do a general approximation by solution for your gravity theory.
No. Hold on. I'm going to say that even Frieder Rombauer's work will have. I mean, the whole point is, as in F of R theories, we saw that this condition should hold. Now, what's the condition here? This is, the problem is all this stuff here, because this one is well behaved. If you want, if you put this one, if the f of the phi equal to zero, that's just a very nice scalar theory. The point is all here. Okay, great. Okay, so, in fact, this is what I wrote there, such that this one corresponds to there, gamma is just 1/2. Chi is a scalar field, U and Xi are functions. Okay, let me see. So B was equal to, it's just a number. That's the combination that you get this. Zeta is just a function there. And then this is the first scalar field, and that's phi is the second. Oh, you can also say lambda and phi are the scalar fields, and this is just a function of lambda. You have this potential, okay. All right, so again, okay. We are happy now, we understood at least the divisive things that are here, even though this is a little bit tricky point. So the equation for lambda is that, for phi, is this other one. All right. Okay, this one, all right. Like I said, so you have the gradient plus two scalar fields, essentially. And then you have some similarity with Gauss-Born cosmology. Gauss-Born cosmology was a scalar like in castles, but coupled with it with the Gauss-Born. Okay, but now, as I said before, for the sitter, this thing is a constant. So it's the couple, so you have no rules. But what happened? But the sitter was unstable. All right. So that was the whole point. People got excited. No spin to ghosts. Great. Now, let's see, though, what happens for backgrounds that are not maximally symmetric. Okay, so Gauss-Bonnet is topology in four dimensions. On the other hand, if it is coupled on ghosts, because I already said it, what about the backgrounds? Sorry. Okay. The answer is not all backgrounds are safe. And that's something really... Let me just say this. Okay, so a coupling like the dilaton with the gas bonnet comes out quite naturally, at least in heterotic string theory, in string theory. Okay, but all the analysis there was made about Minkowski. Okay, and that makes complete sense. Now, to study this kind of field elements of work to background, it's a non-trivial statement to expand, to use the same effective action in another way. Yeah.
Okay, I'm confused about something silly. So if I just write the general equations for your two scalar Gauss-Bonnet R business, right? That theory, are the equations second order? Did
you say yes.
For
yes.
Any they're
yes, and the reason is, okay, thanks for pointing me out there. Okay, so when you vary the action with respect to the G minimum, here you will get dr and d plus 1a. So then you have terms like integrate by parts, right? The terms that you integrate just once cancel because, okay, so let me write it this way. So you will have something like f box of G minimum. Delta G mu, and maybe you have, R mu. Okay? Suppose you have like this kind of terms. Then you integrate twice by parts. When you integrate once, The terms all cancel because of Bianchi identity.
So that the point is that Gauss per day is the Einstein Hilbert plus the total divergence.
Yes, the total divergence, yes, yeah, but you cannot negate that, because now...
I agree, that's the, you're right, John, but the, my confusion is naively, now he's coupling it to
squares,
suppose I integrate by parts, I still have a naively a three-derivative term...
That's true.
...acting on a derivative of a scalar, so it doesn't...
That's true, but you can see, that's a mirror, I don't know, I call it like a mirror of those kind of terms. That because of Bianchi identities, all the third derivatives part disappears.
So are you saying
what's the deep geometrical meaning? Okay, I cannot tell you why. Just calculations I saw are fantastic, but sorry.
You're saying it's completely secondary zone,
spatial
or temporal?
No, so what happens is you can get something like this, that you see. Box F. I mean, this is what survives from those terms. So this is this is a scalar field, fine. You don't have any this kind of number alpha I mean. They disappear because of Bianchi identity. The only things that do, of course, then you would have like F box of R, you know. This term disappears because because essentially you are treating this as a constant, so you already know that the terms will disappear. So when you integrate twice by part, you will have also this kind of term.
I don't want to take F to be constant. So what's this for general?
I said it wrong. Okay, so when you have this kind of term, then you will have. Integrate once and you get number alpha, you get this. And then you integrate another one. One of these terms is gonna be this.
That's
good because that will disappear because the term is the term that is considered as f is a constant. So you already know the term will disappear completely.
Oh,
because the tensor there vanishes identically.
For any background, any
charge, So if you have RGB square, okay, if you do this, you get a tensor. It's not you get zero, you get a tensor that in four dimensions vanishes identically. And in dimension bigger than four, it's just made of second derivatives. So this term here will cancel with the some other box of RMU and so on.
The non-trivial one is the grad phi RMU, and you say the anti identity.
Exactly. So that's the non-trivial part. That when I began to do calculation, I said, all right, this I'm going to keep it. Instead, it disappeared. It's actually, the good part is with the Gauss-Bonnet term, it's small. I mean, just have three terms. It's very easy to do calculations. If you take a general Gaussian here, then I think I think it's a conjecture, okay? Maybe you find a smart way to do it, but essentially you get that. The only terms that are left are this.
Sorry, can I ask another thing?
Yeah.
So if I take Gauss-Bonnet term, I should know this, but I don't. So
yeah.
Gauss-Bonnet, just write it as a linear, that's not going to be linear, it's going to be at least quadratic or whatever. And just linearize Gauss-Bonnet about Minkowski. It's derivative of what?
Okay.
Just
so you're saying V for X?
Suppose I just took your action and linearized about flat space.
Okay.
Or weak field limit. Not flat space. I'm just saying.
You linearize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just do weak field. And,
all right.
Then you're saying all you have is two scalars and a spin tool. That's it.
Yes. Yes.
What if I'm not doing it linear?
No idea.
Can you prove it? Take that action?
Well, what if I prove that action here is two scalar fields coupling this way?
This is an exact dimension.
I mean, this really didn't make any assumption or any.
It's an action. It's an ideal square.
Yeah, I mean, this is just, so if you want, you can call, say, I don't know, chi 1 and chi 2, these two derivatives. So you have two scalar fields, one coupled with R and one with Gauss Bonnet. So, to be speaking, one would say, okay, every graph plus two scalar fields. Right here, disappear again. All right, so
with this type of term, closed Bonnet or double cutoff, this is an axiom, right? It's arising in the computation of
I don't know too much about that question, so I can't tell you exactly.
So, but I mean, the first field is a Brunsdicki field, the second field. This DF for a D5 is a Brunsdicki field.
Yes.
And DF for a D5 is an axiom.
Yeah. If you cut, I guess so. Yeah. So the point, let me just say a little bit better the statement. So on a maximum symmetric breakdowns, this action does not lead to any problem at all. But to some other problems, on other breakdowns actually, then in my case. Alright, so let's study Friedman Robinson Walker. Useful in cosmology, at least. Expand, what happens, you take this action here, and you expand the second order in all the fields you have, without assuming any gauge, all right? Gauge-free things. Okay, so then you have scalar vector and tensor perturbations, all right? So what you're gonna find something like this, all right? So that's the weird part, Okay, that's, one of the differences between this kind of theory and the scalar tensor theory. A scalar tensor theory will have like a Dunham version, but there is a Dunham version, it's not a Dunham version, actually. It is true that you can make a timely definition, but we can see it a little bit better. Okay, how much time? Great. Okay, so you have some, what did I write there? Okay, sorry. Dt, A2. So you get that C minus I secondary in time of, plus B. Okay, so you get something like this. Okay, these A and B are functions of time. There, you will have like terms like this, right? I'm guessing, but the exact calculation are on the paper. Okay, plus 8 H F4. Again, if F1 plus. So if F is a constant, fine, this is just 1. Right? And F, sorry, I call it psi. And psi was the term in front of Gauss Bonnet. What I call the df over d5. Right? So you get this. But, what's the problem here? So the problem here is that the sign of A is not defined. So first of all, I think here I should put So one can make, say, a family definition, okay? So as you said, but the point here, if you're going to get something like, let me say that when here you have the second derivative here, so you will get something like dt over dt bar divided by t squared times A, and you can put it equal to B. So then you get but in order to do that, then once you have that, you get minus B times psi box psi. Okay, so it's clear that B has to be positive, otherwise you get ghost. But if B is positive, because this is a square, also A has to be positive. All right, So in other words, in order to see that, so this thing is completely equivalent to say that the speed of propagation there, the square speed of propagation, is actually b divided by a. And we know that when this thing gets negative, you have instabilities. And the ghost stuff is the sign of a, essentially. So again, you can see this from two different points of view, essentially. Yeah.
Well, you don't need to go to FRW to
necessarily. No, you don't. You're right.
Because if I do weak field, then.
That's true. But.
Whether there's a ghost or not, you will see that. It's a question, actually. If I do weak field in your story,
it
won't disappear on you, right? It's there or it's not there.
Yes. The problem is that there are some guns in which it disappears.
As you go to weak field, you say.
No. What? Well, if you
do your analysis in a small batch for things
like
phi is a constant, mean Minkowski disappears. So in that case, yeah.
So if you take Minkowski, the background Minkowski, and you study this thing, even weak fields, you don't see any because f is a constant. Mm-hmm. On the background, f is a constant. Xi, so it's thing, it becomes a constant on the background. So you don't see it. But maybe I'm wrong. But anyway, yes, what I study is just speed along the work. And the reason.
So you say I have a ghost on cosmological scales, but then when I take weak field limit, that ghost decouples. That's the statement.
No. When I take the weak field, so locally, this condition here doesn't depend on K. Doesn't depend on K, so completely K independent. So meaning, no matter what the scale is of my perturbation, that mean is always depends on B by A. So all K, at all K, that is the thing that drives. So even locally you see.
The problem is that you're starting with fourth order action.
That's true. But the difference is, with the fourth derivative, the ghost was a spurious extra spin to the Lorentz field. Here, it's the gravity. There is no more spurious degrees of spin, but here, the gravity, that's essentially here. Okay, put aside, but you can. That's true for the tensor motion for the scalar. So it's the gravity itself that defines the ghost.
So if you do a quotient issue or a solution problem, including a directed entity with all the derivatives and everything there, you're going to take the ghost.
Yeah.
Yes. But some give the initial condition. You can't escape the ghost.
I think you should be able to see. Yes. I think so. No, don't tell me properly.
So none of your solutions that are, just a stupid statement, so none of your solutions that have ghosts are asymptotically flat, right? So they must all be self-accelerating in the future, so graphic. Your FRW solution that leads to ghosts.
Right. Okay, so yes to your question. I mean, it is true. But the thing is that if you forget about this one divided by R that does not have any cause, say. But if you just put any function there, what happens is that at least for some time, really, you don't have anything in dynamics that prevents those things to change sign. So then what happens is it's quite common that one of those things, A becomes zero or B becomes zero, and you switch sign.
Dynamically?
Yes.
Really?
And by the way, I should say, when you put A equal to 0, B is equal to, or B equal to 0, you don't cross any singularity of the metric. That's important to say. Right? It's not like you see A blows up, then you say, OK, because the background blows up, then you would expect. No. The background moves very smoothly and so on, and then you see this kind of things.
Just a side question.
Yeah.
You have something where the speed of propagation can be greater than the speed of light.
That's right. That's another point. That's a very good point, actually. And we'll talk a little bit later, actually. Here we go, actually. Okay, so A and B should be positive. So, but A and B should be positive means actually that I'm putting the constraints on the grounds, and the possible backgrounds are the one. So that the square speed is positive. And then here we go. So we took a conservative approach, even though not everybody wants that to be the case. It's not a completely sorry. Oh, by the way, just to say something that we talked about a latch. So B here, so if I can make this and B is positive, essentially this behaves like a different metric as we were seeing a latch with the with Justin and Federico. So what happens here, so in the action you're going to have AQ times this. So essentially this field fills this kind of A bar. A bar cube used to be this. So essentially that field fills another metric kind of. But that is true if B is positive. Essentially if it's not a ghost.
But that's just a conformally related.
Yes, exactly. So you have the tensor modes that fills a conformal factor, you have the scalar modes that fills another one, and so on. You have the all other standard fields that fill the A cube just.
Somehow greater than light propagation tends to be associated with instabilities of itself.
Yeah. Okay. So you mean the speed that are bigger than the one?
I mean you excluded it, but
it's yes, I excluded. Okay, the reason I exclude that is actually, if you want, so some people, people actually don't agree very well about this issue. Even though there are, let me just state my point. My point is that, maybe I'm going to anticipate a little bit of things, but it's okay. So the speed there, again, can blow up to infinity. So what happens then, you have a mode that at least a sine instant can blow up to the speed of that mode can blow up to infinity. So this means that a special section, Friedmann-Lorentz special section, gets completely causally connected. And then that's evident a problem of initial condition, a Cauchy problem. Because when you enroll a point in the special section, you will have an infinite, not just the light cone below it, but the whole special section. Yeah. That's my personal statement. On the other hand, some people say, yeah, but you know, you break Lorentz invariance by choosing your background. So it's not really to have speed bigger than one. But in my opinion, you have this Cauchy problem there that can be switched on at any time.
There's also a distinction, I'm not sure, but is this the group velocity you're talking about, or the phase velocity?
No, that's the group velocity.
This is the group velocity.
Yeah.
So that's
it's only phase velocity. Yeah. Yes, actually, there is another constraint coming from Cherenkov radiations. So suppose that the speed of the gradient is less than 1, essentially. So you would see, for example, production of photons or something. Or a photon, giving out gravitons, actually. So the photon would redshift a lot. Well, that's another constraint. I think Guy Moore studied it. Alright. Okay, so the problems are ghosts. Violation of unitarity, okay, it's not really a true statement. Okay, let me talk about that later on. But essentially, let me say it in this way, the vacuum is unstable. And let me see what I mean. I'll tell you what I mean later on. So no wave propagation, you mean the speed becomes negative, the square speed becomes negative. That's a Cauchy problem, Cauchy problem. Okay, ghosts. Let me make promise I'll be short. So by ghost I mean negative kinetic term. In classical mechanics, I mean that the ghost is dead. As you can see, it has the wrong kinetic sign, but also the wrong potential sign. Why is that? Because if I choose that also wrong potential sign, then you get the equation of motion, it is stable. Essentially, it's exact up to a minus, is the reaction. So the orbit is closed. If you put the right potential term, then it's a tachyonic ghost. Alright. But the difference is the Newtonian is strictly negative. Okay? Alright, now, In special relativity, Newtonian spin to negative, you can write it like that, so the energy becomes negative. And what, happens is that the bucking decay is possible, because now you can have, from bucking, you can have two particles, because now you have the energy momentum is conserved, essentially. Actually, more than two particles, three particles, essentially. Because you have the energy, because it's negative, and the other one is positive, and they can add up to zero. Now, so the vacuum is actually unstable. Okay, quantum mechanics, you have a very similar thing. What happens if you take two harmonic oscillators and you couple them for a time t equal to 2t, if you take that, with this coupling over here, then what happens is you have a probability that the state is, say, 0, 0, goes to 1, 1, and it's actually increasing. It's not like a sinusoidal, but actually it's increasing like that. So what happens is from 0, 0, you go to 1, 1, to 2, to 3, and so on. So the ghost loses energies, and the normal one gets energy. But in quantum field theory, then you have, so you can choose either to violate the unitarity or to get a particle with a negative energy, like this. And by doing, if you want to do that, you have to choose the poles, essentially. So, in the propagator, for a normal particle, you would choose this, you know? Those are the poles. But if you choose this, now for the ghost, since you get a minus, then you end up breaking the optical theorem. So what happens for the ghost, you have to choose actually this one. In this case, you don't break the optical theorem, meaning that unitarity is okay. But on the other hand, you are propagating for in time particles with the negative energies. So that's exactly the statement that this one, the energy momentum is free. All right, so vacuum decay. So in quantum theory, you would have a vacuum decay. So of course, when you have vacuum decay, since your free space goes up, and you introduce a cutoff. Essentially, you introduce a ghost, you introduce a cutoff for you.
Lorentz violation.
Yes, Lorentz violation. That's important. All right. Objections. The presence of the ghost there. Okay, so it's only an effective action. Well, you know, you can choose higher powers and so on that can heal the problem. I'm not saying that it's not possible. Actually, it probably that seems to be the case. But on the other hand, in these models, this is a low energy description. You would expect that higher powers would appear at higher energies.
That won't fix it.
That's also my opinion, but you never know. Maybe, well, I don't know. The superluminal, some people say maybe it's okay, but there is also this thing. So if you have this non-superluminal propagating moment, essentially you have two cones. And for some background, say black hole, you would suspect that there are two horizons, two temperatures. And some people say that you can break the third theorem of thermodynamics, essentially. Perpetual continuum.
Third?
Second.
Sorry.
Third
is T is equal to
zero, right?
If you have a double oscillator model, and so your negative energy contribution, then the Hermitian Hamiltonian is non-Hermitian. So the Hamiltonian is non-Hermitian.
If I take, say, quantum mechanics,
yeah,
and I take minus p squared divided by 2
r,
p squared is
negative energy contributions as well as positive energy contributions in the field operators. Okay? You will find that is not permission. Probabilities are supposedly not conserved.
Yeah, I think that's a signal of unitary breaking.
You can prove that the non-Hermitian Hamiltonian is PT symmetric, identified symmetric. Then there are cases where you do get a real eigenspectrum, and you get unitary.
Yeah.
connection shows. So the problem left is to get the vacuum to be stable.
Yeah.
You're still left with that problem.
Yeah, that's right.
But then you can have the positive negative energy spectrum only coupled through gravity.
So all these things that we just said, the Friedel Robinson work is not a good background, cosmology goes to another background. The problem is that, well, then I don't know, it's difficult to make cosmology at least. Okay, so all right, so take so what I did, I think I'm gonna maybe cut off a lot of it, but essentially, so for repair attractors, they depend on parameter space. So I studied that parameter space that was giving no Gauss. So this area here is no Gauss, this one is no Gauss, no instability, say C squared negative. And the darkest area is also no superluminal modes. So as you can see, these constraints cut off a large parameter space. And you will say, because those are power law attractive solutions, you will say, okay, those are fine. All right, I'm gonna skip these conclusions, they're not useful though. Okay, and let me do this part over here. That's the last part, okay. So, so when you have so we studied just the late time problem attractor, but on the other hand, one could say, so those conditions should be satisfied at all times, not just at very late times. So what I did was, with Mark Heinemann, so this is a work in progress, so it was actually to study exactly the cosmology there so that we could integrate the equation at all times and see what happened to those constraints. Okay, it's going to take too much time. So let me just summarize a bit what happens. So if you have 1 divided by, say, things like, say, R squared minus AR squared minus Gauss Monnet, or plus B Gauss Monnet if you want, right? So this thing could be mapped to something like psi of phi times Gauss Monnet. And psi of phi was 1 by proportional to 1 by to some power of phi. Now what happens? And phi was BR squared plus R plus 1. When B is a constant. Okay, what happens? When phi goes to 0, your action blows up. Now, so when what happens when the action blows up? You can study the differential equation. What happens then? You get actually a separatrix. It's like phi equal to 0 in Brunstein. So universe will never cross it. All right? Now, phi is equal to 0, what does it mean? Phi is equal to 0 means, phi can be written, in this way, where q is the acceleration parameter. And b was a constant. So essentially, it's a polynomial in q. So you can find the roots of that polynomial. And if the root is between BDN and acceleration, if that's true, so that's a dynamical way to cut off parameter space in B. All right. So this was the first thing. The second thing I want to say, so remember, I want to destroy the model, essentially. Okay. So one, I was thinking to use just the Gauss conditions. But now I saw that there is a possibility for some B, and that B, that the B that is not good, this positive B, for that B, you get phi is equal to 0 for Q between 1 and 0. 1 is radiation domination, and 0 is A double dot, which is sine. Okay?
So you get a future schematic.
In the past, so universe would never accelerate.
At some point, the acceleration has to go forward. And that in this case, it happens to be between matter and radiation.
Yeah, between radiation and dark energy. Yes, that's right. Yes. Yeah. So that if you start on Serenity, you will never escape because you cannot cross that. Okay. So the other thing that I wanted to say, as you can see, oh, by the way, lambda and phi are two curvature invariants, just scalars, right? So lambda phi and lambda prime, where prime mean, means derivative with respect to the log of the scale factor, is this. So as you can see, there is a delta here. When delta goes to zero, lambda prime and phi prime blow up. And that means that lambda was equal to r, so that means something like this blow up. Right? In this background, this is proportional to this. Lambda prime squared. Right? So that means that you get actually a curvature singularity. What that means, if you study again the differential equation properly, is that you cannot cross it. So essentially, the solution stops there. All right, so, okay, when does that happen? Again, okay. So defining kappa, the variable kappa to be dead, then delta can be written this way. And again, this is a polynomial kappa, because gamma k is that thing, and gamma is just 1/2. I think actually this is gamma k, sorry, this is a typo. Okay, so that's gamma k, and gamma k is this. So then you can solve, you can put k as a function of q, the acceleration parameter. And again, BBN and today is this. So what happens is you get the singularity delta equal to zero if B is less than B bar. And B bar is essentially minus 1/3, depending on this parameter. So what happens? You have two parts. One, B is less than B bar, it is negative B, meaning that you have a singularity in the past. Between BBN and today, there was a singularity. Or B positive, then you have a separatrix. So what is left over there is this interval here. At that time, we studied the Gauss condition there. Okay. Just what we did was we assumed that at some point in the past, going back in time, those two theories, GR and this kind of modifications graphic should be close enough. Otherwise, you screw up other PPN and so on. So then we can use the initial condition GR at very early times to see what is lambda and phi, with this R and that one.
Four months.
Yes.
Right.
Totally. Okay. So then, so at a given n, n was the log of a, n negative enough to be very close to BBN, then we use Gauss conditions. Is it clear? No? I mean, lambda and phi can be written as GR. So I have my equation, lambda phi and phi prime can be written like that. So we can use those equations to put it in the Gauss conditions. Okay, so already at m is equal to minus 10, no initial condition satisfied, no initial condition in this interval satisfy Gauss conditions. All right? And that's it, because now the only interval that was left over has no good initial condition. I mean, compatible with no Gauss and so on. So, okay, so these are conclusions. So we studied Monitor Gravity models. There are tacos, but also Gauss. What's that? Okay, yes, I mean, and then unfortunately, there is no parameter space that is viable. Thanks. Sorry.
So even before you do a Gauss analysis, if I just take your action with
this,
these functions Gauss-Bonnet and stuff, maybe I missed it, but these are ruled out as well by solar system.
Okay, that's a good point. Okay, to tell you the truth, I don't really know. I don't really know if they are ruled out. What I know, though, is that at least when this thing goes to zero, if you take a scalar tensor theory, some people claim that, some people claim, yeah, it's ruled out because omega is equal to zero. And you have, usually in this kind of approaches, you have a weak potential. So essentially, Brunsdicki requirement that says the omega has to be bigger than Politano for a massless field. So they ruled out. Other people do claim that there are functions F that makes the field quite massive. So essentially, you can avoid them. Other people say that when you study, so you're doing a PPM formalism there to study the bounds on omega there, for Brunsdicki, you say. But in some case, actually, so essentially you linearize about Svashi. So the linearization, some people claim the linearization is not valid because actually the terms, the second order terms are bigger than the first order. So essentially you have a non-linear theory there. So those bounds cannot be applied. So it's not, it would be fantastic, but it's not like trivial to really put the solar system constraint. People are discussing it all.
But with the second set of people who say that nonlinear terms are important, so they're saying it's too hard to analyze, is that the conclusion? One doesn't know whether or not.
Essentially, yes. And then one says, okay, what about the third order terms? I mean, the cubic terms, sorry. Are they also, so essentially, if it happens like that, you may say that strongly coupled theory. So then one should actually solve completely the full problem of nonlinear differential equation.
But do they have any reason to suspect that it would be consistent?
Okay, for some function essentially.
If you just take some random series, it's not likely to reproduce.
Okay. So then not too much. Because more should ask about the bounds for this thing. It's not. But I think it's a very important point. I mean, to bounce to put other bounds on this. Yeah.
I think I should have something. John Brunsdicki, you have chi times r.
Yeah.
Chi is 1/T.
That's true.
Dimension of the action.
Yeah.
So if chi is 0, chi is infinite.
That's true.
So if you look at the field equations, the carbon g mean u equals to 8 pi z g times t mean u. So g can be 0. See what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
In asymptotically free quantum gravity, Stephen Langley, g is 0, not the small distance in the field equations.
You're saying, can you dynamically get g equals 0 in Brunsdicki?
Yeah, you can, in the field equation.
No, because if you go to Einstein frame and you cannot generalize a kinetic term, that phi equals 0 is at infinity and moduli.
Yeah.
And you can show that's going to be a singularity, like a big structure
thing. Oops, no, it's me.
It's a good question, but I think the answer is you reach it, but it's a curvature singularity in Einstein frame.
Also, if you take the kinetic term, which is a bit weird, and you normalize it, it's like a chi is an exponential of a properly normalized field. So, if you look at going with that field, then everything is fine. But since this chi is the exponential of the other field, it never goes to.
So, you can only transform to Einstein frame.
Or just transform the scalar field and give it a proper kinetic term.
So what if you have a potential V of G in the action?
I agree with Justin, because so G is 1/2 by chi, and chi is R. So if you put G in equal to 0, R goes to infinity. So you get a singularity. This is naive.
So you're saying you can't have an asymptotically free Brunsdicki theory, that's what you're saying.
With omega is equal to 0, yes.
No, omega is not 0. Some computation I don't understand. Big peak.
Okay.
Big peak.
Yeah, we shall talk, this is getting there. We're reading it to
us.